bullets thundered on the castle windows for days on end. The lake rose, the flower beds turned into muddy streams, and Hagrid's pumpkins swelled to the size of garden sheds. Oliver Wood's enthusiasm for regular training sessions, however... Oh, there you are. Excuse me, I was just reading my Harry Potter fan fiction audiobook. How are you?
There's not enough coffee in the world to deal with this at this time of the morning. What is happening?
Well, I've started just doing this side project, reading all of Harry Potter.
In English? In Norwegian?
Well, something in between.
Norwenglish version?
Yeah.
There's a market for that.
Yeah, there's even a Latin version, so why the hell not?
I didn't know that. I used to have a Latin version of Winnie the Pooh.
Pooh what?
Winnie the Pooh? This is traditional British... Please tell me you're just winding me up.
I was trying to make a joke about the last name, but okay. Winnie the Pooh in Norwegian, Ole Brum.
What does that mean?
Ole is a pretty common name, and Brum is perhaps what the bear says.
That went off the rails pretty quickly. We were 1 minute 37 in.
I didn't... Was there any rails to begin with?
We're rail-free. We're not a tram. This is not the tram of podcasts. This is the aeroplane of podcasts.
It's not a freight train of podcasts. Well, soon it's starting to become a freight train, actually.
We're a juggernaut. We have achieved momentum.
Episode 10.
Actually. Congratulations. Did you think we'd make it this far?
Yeah, I thought so. We are pretty stable podcasters.
Speak for yourself.
Stamina. We have the stamina, right?
Right. This is an endurance sport. This is not a sprint. How's the weather in Bergen?
Oh, the weather. It's still not that bad. It still doesn't rain. It's cold. It's on, yeah. On the minus side of the zero.
Wow. I wasn't sure that ever happened there.
It does. When it doesn't rain, it gets cold.
It's pretty cold in Oslo this morning. I thought my face was going to fall off.
I think that happens later in episode... No. It's so cold that the breadcrumbs that was thrown out yesterday wasn't eaten. So no birds. It may be a kid that misunderstood the concept, but...
I'm just imagining now this frozen child, like frozen in position, trying to reach these breadcrumbs, and just the whole thing is just preserved in ice forever.
Well,
at least until May.
Or you missed the part where you should just throw one and one at a time.
Or just a whole handful together.
A breadcrumb, yeah. Breadcrumb flare, right?
We should do some follow-up.
We should. Do we have some?
We did. We got, I think Mike Smith and Mark Gould, I think, both sent stuff. I think Mike Smith did. Ellis Pratt may have sent stuff as well. We got loads, actually, mostly about regional accents and the difference between dialects and accents. I'm sorry to say, I couldn't play. Some of the files were Windows Media, and I could not get them to work on my machine.
Me neither.
Sorry.
It remains
Thank you anyway.
A mystery.
It does.
Perhaps our dear listeners should record some samples themselves and send them to us. That would be interesting.
That would be cool. Just don't do it in Windows Media. Actually, no, we can play that, just not from the web.
Windows Media, isn't that a thing from the 90s? Or do people even have Windows anymore?
I don't know. Do people still have Harry Potter fan fiction? Isn't that also from the 90s?
Touché. And we see you next week. Now, I would love to explore the dialect fauna of the Scottish non-empire.
I'm just trying to decide if my country has just been dissed or not. Maybe. Probably. Historically, it's extremely likely. Like, if you apply Bayes' theorem to has Scotland been dissed, all the priors kind of point in the general direction of, yeah, probably. Every outcome is pretty much contingent on the fact that Scotland has indeed been dissed quite a lot in the past. It's a bit early for statistics.
Should we do a... Do you think there are differences between the statistics in the UK and in Norway? Like the folk statistics.
Okay, you're going to have to unpack that. What do you mean by that?
I just found it up, but well, so we have the discipline of statistics, right? Which you can study,
right,
and so on. But then you have this sort of statistics that people sort of just do.
Like what?
I think it. You can see it sometimes in the newspapers when they are creatively adding and subtracting percentage points and so on and so on. So like folk statistics, like how you sort of intuitively reckon about statistical stuff.
Like most of it's just anchored around the availability heuristic, right? Like, oh, this thing happened to me, therefore it's really common.
I'm trying to sort of signal that, yeah, I have read at least half of the Kahneman book.
Nice. I've
look
read
at me.
Possibly less. Yeah, well, look at you, weren't you clever? You've read more of it than I have. I've just read things sort of that exist around it. That's a good book, though, like in terms of the kind of the concept, the general idea. Oh, but that's the problem, yeah. There's a whole thing here about how, like, if you've got basically, like, a grippy and kind of sticky concept, right, that, like, it's truthy, and that's more interesting and more people are more into that than, like, something that's actually technically correct. This has gone downhill so fast. I know, like, 4 minutes ago we were talking about Bayesian statistics, and now we've just gone down this whole hole about, oh, my God, okay, rescue me, or at least let me drink more coffee.
I will join you in the coffee drinking.
I had a horrible thought this morning. What happens, right, when all the coffee has run out because we've ruined the climate and there's no more coffee? How are we going to do this podcast? Are we going to have to go back to podcasting in the evenings?
I think that when we are sort of dwelling in our cardboard sheds with the carpets and the Wi-Fi connection almost stable, we will have our podcasting accompanied with instant coffee, because we can freeze dry the coffee, right? We can freeze dry it and keep it in the vaults, and there will be the thing you had in the war.
Rationing,
yeah. Coffee rationing. And we will save our rations for the monthly podcast recording.
This is a bleak future you're describing. Very bleak. Instant coffee. I don't know if I can carry on, man. That might be it for me.
Or we could switch to tea.
Yeah. That's a different kind of stimulant. Is this the substance abuse episode?
Yeah, we have already touched on the fleinsopp, and there has been drinking.
You promised that we would get a drunken episode. I saw you on Twitter.
Yeah, drunken history.
That cannot be more inaccurate than the actual, like, sober history version that I would record.
But are you familiar with the series?
No.
Ah, okay. Hence the baffled mind, right? Okay, so there is this YouTube series, of course. There's always a YouTube series called Drunken History, where not famous people, but sometimes perhaps famous people get themselves drunk and narrate some bit of American history. And it's reenacted.
Are these people just famous for other things? They're not historians themselves.
Yeah, they are usually comedians or actors or something.
Yeah, I just realized the stupidity of that question because, you know, like famous American YouTubing historians is like a, it's a pretty small niche there, I guess. Or maybe not. Maybe I would be surprised. Everything is on YouTube.
Yeah, like a drunken Bill Bryson or something.
Oh my God, I would pay good money to go to that show. That would be amazing.
Or yeah, and I think at some point they are going from being drunken to being wasted, and then the episode sort of loses its...
Right, yeah. There's a fine line, right? Mm. Have you seen the drunken usability testing recordings?
No.
That's actually not a bad way to conduct, blah, blah, disclaimer, ethics, something, something, but that's not a bad way to find out if your website is usable, right? Like you pour someone a few drinks and then you give them a task, right? Like normal usability testing, and you see if they can complete it, because of course their kind of cognitive functioning is pretty impaired at that point. So it's a great way of finding out in all seriousness whether your website is simply designed and works well for someone who's struggling.
But sometimes you don't want it to work fine for people who are struggling whilst drunk, right? Twitter should actually have some sort of functionality that prevents
breathalyzer.
People.
Yeah. Right, breathe into this before you start tweeting. Yeah, you're only, sorry, we've just recorded your blood alcohol or your breath alcohol levels anyway, and you're only allowed 4 characters. Choose wisely.
You could do a lot of damage with 4 characters, actually.
You can, in the age of emoji and being able to tweet emoji, a lot can go wrong in that time.
Right, I forgot to report my homework last time.
Tell us about your homework.
So, it was about Norwegian emigration patterns in the 60s.
Right.
So I have a 500-word essay I can read to you.
Sorry, it's pretty early.
But, well, as always with emigration, there are pull and push.
Forces?
Is it forces? I think it's something else, but never mind. It's of course about the financial stuff, employment and so on. So, and I guess after the war, Northern Norway got it pretty bad. It was basically burned down.
Right. There was a lot of setting fire to things as the Germans retreated, right?
Yeah. So I guess there were some incentives to move further south. And I think there was a tendency for centralization in the country as a whole. And there were some, well, it was the age of modernization, right? And yeah, so quite a lot of northern Norwegians moved to Oslo. And they weren't welcome.
Why not?
The narcissism of small differences, I guess.
Right, they sounded foreign, right?
So, in that case, it was actually quite normal to change your dialect.
To fit in?
Mm.
Is it like the Norwegian equivalent of, you know, like maybe, I don't know, 100 years previous to that, if you had emigrated to the United States and there would be signs outside all the places saying no Irish?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. Brutal.
Yeah, it was. And I think even in the... apartment ads, right? They explicitly stated no Northern Norwegians.
Man. It was so like you would have to change how you spoke, right?
Yeah.
Wow. Oslovian fascism. Brutal. So what changed? Why are we not still in that state? Because Norway seems to have come a long way in a relatively short amount of time. Like, arguably the US has fought that battle much, much more slowly. If you think about like no blacks, no Irish, no whatever, right? Like it's kind of signs people used to hang out there. That fight is still going on there to some extent. Whereas in Norway, like everyone seems to have embraced sort of diversity. Admittedly, there's like less of a skin color issue thing going on there, but still.
Yeah, what changed? As always, it's a combination of multiple factors. I guess some people died and the prejudices with them. And, well, come the 70s, we started to get real immigration. So perhaps we found some new people to look down at. And always, and also with the 70s, you got the change in politics. The socialist movement was pretty strong in Norway, right? So
also, everyone was high.
Yeah, that too. So I guess it ebbed out.
Cool, nice historical detour. I like it. Now it's pretty common, I think, to hear people from all over. Certainly, there's like people from North Norway in my podcast feed on NRK. So. Yeah, we seem to have got past that. Nice. Now I'm wondering, like, I'm sure the same happened in, particularly in London, which has always been obviously the magnet in the UK to draw people, economic migrants from the rest of the UK. And now I'm wondering what the equivalent situation is. I've got to go and read about this, but I'm pretty sure there was a time when both Scots and Irish people were not necessarily welcome. And maybe it wasn't that long ago, I'm not sure.
Yeah, do you think that would sort of be because Scottish and Irish people wouldn't typically be in the middle class, or would they?
Yeah, well, it's complicated. Like Edinburgh has had a very, very long history, and Glasgow to some extent, a very long history of people who were sort of relatively wealthy, because a lot of people doing trade, people who had made money, I was going to say their fortunes, but that sounds like they were dead wealthy, and they might not have been, they might just have had, been comfortable, and Edinburgh, and I think Glasgow as well, had a lot of people who were sort of comfortable, middle class, educated, you know, going back like 300 years, so it's not necessarily the case that if you were from Scotland, you would be poor at the same time. And actually, another day, I'll read a list of Scottish self-made rich people, philanthropists, famous people, scientists, blah, blah, blah. And the list is quite impressive. There was a period there where it was just really all coming together. And at the same time, statistically, probably, statistics again, it's not even 7:30, twice, at least twice already. Statistically speaking, I imagine they were in the vast minority, right? Like Scottish people generally, probably on average, not that well off, probably farming, you know, the usual small concentrated bodies of people with a lot of money and power and everyone else out grubbing in the fields. This is like drunk history, but without the alcohol, but like the factual quantity and the factual quality of the stuff that I'm saying is probably exactly the same. We should do a test. We should do a before and after test. Wait, get me some vodka. Don't hate vodka.
Should we introduce a dogma to this podcast to not be apologetic? Is that even possible?
Well, first of all, I'm British. And I think maybe we are second only to Canada internationally in terms of apologising. So that's going to be a hard sell. Second, I've spent so long training and being a scientist that it's very, very difficult to overreach in terms of recalling information without having to disclaim like all this stuff, like going, well, I think, and I'm not sure, and it may be that, and this is probably wrong. Because if you don't do that in science, you are completely hosed.
Yeah, but if you dive into the mentality of this sort of rests on the premise that people actually takes us seriously.
Don't tell me that. You're puncturing my bubble here.
And, well, in this age, I'm not that sure anymore.
This is a personal integrity thing. Stuff whether people take this podcast seriously or not. I mind if I'm overreaching. I care. It seems questionable.
Also, we are we are not in the academy anymore. We are in the private sector. We work as consultants, and we have a CRM system, and we are expected perhaps to get some business going. And in order to always be closing, reference, I think we could, we would need a practice to be less, to be more assured.
Yeah.
Absolute.
But at the same time, right, that's totally the expertise that we acquired in academia is totally, in a way, what people are paying for, right? They're paying for someone who can think and has frameworks to think and be discursive with. And yeah, I spent the last several years since leaving academia getting my corners well and truly rubbed off, right, intellectually. But that's great. I love to be practical. I'm cool with that. But at the same time, you won't find me saying, oh, yeah, man, you've got to try this technique because, like, it will solve all your problems. I can't do that.
Well, I can't disagree with that. I tried to be Baldwin's advocate there, but
which Baldwin? There's so many. Oh, please tell me it's Adam Baldwin. Are you just going to come in here and just like...
Go for the door. No, it's the Alec one. That's a funny name when you come to think of it.
What, Alec or Baldwin? Alec. Hmm. Yeah, I think that's from a different time.
Hmm. Of course you're right. But there's always a middle ground because there's just so much relativism people want to pay for.
Yeah, one of the things I notice is that people's tolerance for relativism and imposing sort of caveats on information is very, very low outside academia. They just want the kind of, yeah, what's the TLDR? Yeah, but like, is that or isn't it? And I'm like, well, sometimes. Yeah. And you gotta, yeah, there's a sweet spot in there somewhere where everyone's happy.
Yep.
Nice. Right. Let's talk about this thing. So when I came to Norway, one of the first conversations I remember having is with one of my very lovely colleagues. And I was explaining something to her. I think she said, like, tell me about your background because I want to know how we can get the most out of you while you're here. And I told her a little bit about myself and what I've been doing and what I was interested in. And while I was talking, she just sat and she nodded. And I don't think she wrote anything down, but we were just having a conversation. And I would say stuff and she would, and I would say something else. And this kept going on. And that was fascinating. And I was trying to hold this conversation, but simultaneously I was also like, this is really interesting. On the one hand, the effect was like someone who was totally hanging on my every word, right? And on the other hand, you know, I was very, very aware, no, actually, this is this other thing that people do here. And they do it in Sweden as well, parts of Sweden anyway, where they don't say, yep, uh-huh, yes. They just go.
Is that the case?
Oh, yes. So many of my colleagues do it here.
Just the in-breathe? No sound?
Often no sound. Sometimes a little bit of kind of vocalizing, but like often just... This is not a West Coast thing.
Because I expected you to talk about the... what's called the ingressive speech, right? So when we are actually pronouncing a word whilst breathing in.
Can you give me an example?
Yeah.
We get that as well.
Yeah. Because now I said yes whilst breathing in, which is, I think it has some kind of affirmative effect or something. But
right. Quite a strong one, actually.
But just breathing in loudly. I have ever thought about that.
Well, maybe I'm exaggerating a little bit, because often it does come with a yup, 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 like that.
There are probably a little yes in there somewhere.
Sometimes it's hard to hear the yes. Sometimes it genuinely is just...
I guess my brain just fills it in.
Right. So this is pretty new to someone who's not from this part of the world.
Yeah. I'm not a linguist, so I can't explain it, but it's a thing.
It's totally a thing. I'll give you another thing. Use of but not not like I'm not sure what I'm saying. Use of What a great syllable that is in Norwegian. It does so much work.
Well,
I'm waiting for you to use it now. You had a whole opportunity there and you just let it go.
I did. I did actually just use it. But I use it pretty much in this podcast.
Mm.
And I haven't really been a person that uses that as much. But I think I swept through notes at an earlier point, and I saw the item, and I began doing it.
You've been seeding it this whole time.
Yeah.
That is Machiavellian. What was your goal? What was your outcome in trying to do this?
Well, I realized that doing this podcast, I'll become the token Norwegian, the stereotypical Norwegian. So I guess I had to adopt some stereotypical characteristics.
Yeah, but do you see me sitting here in like a tartan tam o'shanter with fake red hair poking out? I think not. We can do more. We can do better than like cheap national stereotypes.
That's for the second season, when we sort of tear it apart.
It's like opening the kimono, but opening the kilt, I guess. I don't know what let's just leave that.
It's more like pointing out the hegemonic discourse behind the kimono.
It's too early. Right. So use of it's another thing I noticed really early, is that often people, instead of saying yes or I agree or that's interesting or right then, or lots and lots of other things that have actual words in English to a native English speaker, we just use but not just it's entirely like the tonality of this, because Norwegian's a pretty tonal language. It's like it's completely context dependent, right? So we could have a little group. Thank you. We could have a little group discussion, and at the end of that, when there's no more to say, and a native English speaker or a British person might say something like, right then, as a kind of wrapping up or a signal to move on that we're done with that packet of discussion, might say something like, and that just means we're done. There's nothing more to say here. I agree with you. Let's move on. It does a lot of work, that one little sound.
Yeah, and I guess when you have to say something to sort of round it up, you sort of also invite for more discussion, right? But with the it's not sort of expected that you have to say something after that. You can just walk away.
Right. You made a short one there. That was like, we're done with this.
Mm.
That was like a totally different noise than the kind of, that's interesting. Let's all just think about that for a minute. This is surprisingly difficult to pick apart and explain in words. Like, I think anyone would know it. Anyone from, let's say, Northern Europe would know what the noises meant, even as not a Norwegian speaker.
Yeah, it's sort of a phonetic Swiss Army knife. And
title.
but I guess it's a feature of the Scandinavian languages. But the Danish actually have actually another thing, which is no.
And what does it mean?
And I'm not Danish, so I can't do it properly, but well, it can mean anything. Pretending on the sort of way they it said, no, but I can't. But you go Google it or something. Or yeah. I can have Guro do it. She actually
is she part Danish?
No, but she learned Danish.
That seems like the kind of thing she would do. Why?
Why not? Because she's Guro. So yeah, she speaks Danish, and that's a crazy hard language to speak.
I have a Danish colleague here. It sounds hard.
I think there are some kind of statistic somewhere that says that Danish children are amongst children that learns their language sort of last. They take the longest time to learn their own language.
Wow, even longer than, say, Japanese kids? Or
Japanese isn't that bit difficult.
It seems like there's a lot of words.
There's a lot of words in every language.
Touché.
I don't think the vocabulary is larger in Japanese than most other languages. What makes it hard is perhaps the written system.
That was kind of what I was getting at, is there's a lot of orthography, I guess, if that's the word, to memorize, right?
We are talking about spoken language.
Mm. Yeah, that shouldn't, I guess, make any difference, right?
That was a nice mm.
Thank you.
Getting there, yeah. And I think phonetically, Japanese is perhaps even simpler. Because they have, I think they have less sounds than, for example, Danish.
I could believe that.
They don't differ between M and N, for example, or L and R.
Right. Reading it back in slightly.
Watashi wa nihongo o benkyou shite mashita. That was almost correct.
What does it mean?
I used to study Japanese.
Nice. I really like the sounds of Japanese. There's something very pleasing about it.
Mm.
So I mentioned before that people in Sweden do the breathing in thing, right? Like, I've heard it much less there. I think it might be a North Sweden thing. But they have their equivalent, I think, of the mm, which is ah. It's a vowel there. And if you watch something like The Bridge, you can hear a lot of it. People just using ah to kind of signal agreement or tacit agreement or, okay, we're done with this topic, let's move on kind of things. And it reminded me, when I started watching The Bridge, it reminded me of Yorkshire in England, because there's a thing that classically people do in Yorkshire, and bearing in mind Yorkshire's kind of geographical location and its history vis-a-vis Scandinavia.
No, let me tell you about my children. We got it so bad. We lived in a shoe.
You are, I see, familiar with the works of Yorkshire.
And we had paper for dinner, if we were lucky.
Yeah, you were lucky to have paper. Paper? We dreamed of paper. Right. In Yorkshire, classically, if we're having a conversation and the conversation has come to a natural lull, I don't know if young people do this anymore, right? But like classically, you've got your old guy in a flat cap and he would say, ah. It's a different sound than the Swedish one, because the Swedish one is more ah, but that was very nasal. But yeah, it's basically the same thing, right? And that's the only place in the UK that I can think of that I've been where people do the same thing as mm or ah.
So there's a phonetic bridge between Yorkshire,
if you're American.
Yorkshire.
No, that was Japanese again. That's, yeah, via the States. Wow.
Travel
around the world with the Small Differences podcast. Cultural exchange with no borders.
We should come back to UK place names later.
Sure.
all the creative ways I try to pronounce Leicestershire and so on.
You nailed it right there. We should talk about Worcestershire and Toaster and Gloucestershire and Cirencester and, yeah, you bet. And that's before we go to Scotland, by the way. One word for you, Ochtermachtie.
But you touched on a hot topic of the Scandinavian language, namely vowels.
The pronunciation of this just gets better every single episode. Right. Now, this is hard. You all have more vowels than I'm used to, or at least different vowels. I'm willing to believe that there are some British vowels that we have that you don't. But as a learner of Norwegian, there are some vowel sounds that in general I'm not very used to making, with some notable exceptions. The main thing that I notice, the things that I struggle with are AU, AU, and EU, AU, which to me are very hard to differentiate. But as someone who spent quite a bit of my life in Glasgow, I get some help with that. So if you're in Glasgow and you say something to someone and they're like, what, I don't believe you, or like, how is that possible? Then they'll say, how? How's that? And that au noise is just, as far as I can tell, is just like spot on for Norwegian, right?
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
So that was a nice little help that I got that I didn't expect.
Life hack.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, just spend time in Glasgow, you'd be set. But there are some vowels here, man. I mean, there are some vowels. And you don't get any help, right? Like, when I look up stuff in dictionaries or grammar books or whatever, and it's talking about pronunciation, and then there's this sound which I'm just gonna screw this up, I can tell. A. And it just says there's no English equivalent, and you're like, thanks.
So we have the sort of extra vowels, right? A, ø, å, which you don't have in English.
I think
at least not the letters for them.
Right, but, right. Sometimes we make the sounds, but yeah.
Yeah. And in addition to that, Norwegian is it an overreach to say it's pretty heavy with diphthongs?
Well, it's tonal, right? Yeah. I don't know if these two things are related or not, actually.
So we like to stick the vowels together.
Can you give examples of some words that do that?
For example, øy, which is the Norwegian word for island. Øy, ø, I. And au, that would be the word you utter when you feel some pain.
Oh, so not au or ow.
Au.
But au.
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 Am I doing that right?
Almost.
Au.
Closer. Au.
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 Au. Oh, okay. Au. Better?
I wonder how it's like to sort of come into the midst of this.
It's like someone's banged their toe and they're just hopping around.
And you have the same in Aust.
You want me to say that, don't you?
Yeah.
Aust.
Ah, that's pretty good. And do we have? Of course, we have more. Again, it's hard to come up with this on the spot.
Knausgård.
Yeah, Knausgård.
You rolled your R at the end of that. I didn't expect that.
Never expect the rolling R's. I think Germans, they struggle with the distinction between O and U.
Yeah, I can believe that.
Do you manage to...
O, U.
O, U, U.
O, U-O.
Ah, not bad. Which is Norwegian for good.
Thanks, I'll take the compliment. Being bad at taking compliments is another thing that we could talk about.
Yeah, so A, U, E, U, yeah, okay. Do we have more? How is the Ø how is that going for you?
On its own, just Ø.
Yeah.
I don't have a problem with it. I learned German at school, like, it's not the same, maybe, but it's pretty close.
E and E?
E, E. Again, I got help with that. Czech has the same, and I studied Russian a little bit, and that has the same, so not hard.
I just did Russian a little bit.
Yeah, well, you just threw in like a whole phrase of Japanese earlier, so don't come at me with that whole, fancy, look at you with your fancy språk.
Right. I'm sure there's more to unpack with the Norwegian vowels.
Dead air. Clearly, there's nothing more to unpack. We're done here. Go home. Pack up, everyone.
I noticed that you noticed that I did something last episode with the pronunciation of the name Matthew Smith.
Right. That was very nicely done right there.
Yeah.
But yeah, I noticed that you noticed.
Well, I have to, it was sort of an, what do you call it, an aspiration? No.
I don't know what this is called.
I was conscious of what I was doing saying that, but that being said, the TH sound has been a struggle for me.
Well, it's hard, right? It doesn't occur naturally in Norwegian. I think the people in Iceland ran off with it like several hundred years ago, and they're not giving it back.
So when I'm not sure or I feel that I can't do it, I sometimes will sort of overdo it.
Like
Matthew Smith.
You end up sounding like Liv Tyler trying to read Elvish, right?
Yeah. Oh, Jesus Christ. trigger warning. well, you almost did a thing there. Shout out to the Slack podcast, which I don't remember the name of. That's a good shout out.
They have their own podcast?
They have. Work in Progress.
How am I not listening to this?
Combines
almost everything I like in one package.
You're busy doing the podcasts. Yeah, there I have it. No. Can you do a song or something?
Tap dance to fill the air. Every time I remember, by the way, that the Slack blog is called Several People Are Typing, it makes me happy.
They pretty much nailed the thing.
They nailed everything.
What's stil or tone called in English?
Oh, there's no good equivalent. Tone of voice, I guess.
Yeah, of course.
It's not quite the same, but it'll do.
Yeah. So it's about this YouTube phenomena.
Point of order. One phenomenon, two phenomena. I'll stop being
a
dick now.
All right,
sorry.
All right. It's like people who whispers. ASMR. It's called ASMR. Autonomous Sensory Meridian Response.
Say more.
Is this my cultural pick?
It is now.
Yeah. So it's like recordings of people whispering and stuff. And for some people are pretty responsive to this. So they get that tingling sensation in their necks and stuff. And people use it for relaxing and for sleeping in and so on. It's pretty interesting.
Wow. Wow. I had no idea. The word that comes to mind is susurration. in English, which I think is pretty onomatopoeic.
Yeah, it's like that. Yeah.
Fascinating. Huh. Okay, right. Well, that's my my afternoon on YouTube, I guess. How do we get here? Liv Tyler.
Liv Tyler, yeah. yeah. Tolkien. Wow. Tolkien, actually, is... I guess... He sort of... He made a... So he constructed his stories from, among others, Nordic mythology.
Right, right.
And I think a motivation was that the UK sort of lacked a proper sort of genesis or mythology.
I think that's selling it a little bit short. We have quite a lot of kind of myths and legends and stuff. I mean, nothing to compete with Norse mythology, to be fair, which is just, like, badass.
But I guess perhaps the folkloric research wasn't that developed at the time, or perhaps this was a marketing trick or something.
Come to Scandinavia.
But,
you've learned the language, read the book, now... He stole heavily from Icelandic, as far as I can tell, when he constructed Elvish. The very little I read about it, I think he did quite a lot from that.
Yeah, but it's sort of a mix between Icelandic, Nordic, Finnish, and so on.
Yeah, I have to read it with fresh eyes now.
So yeah,
there's a lot of eyes in it now. I think about it.
I forgot to continue with the black metal school.
Yeah, what happened? I was going to be all like
guess for next time, you can check out the black metal band Gorgoroth.
Because?
Because they took their name from the mires of... where's the resident of Sauron? What's that called again? I'm so...
I'm out of practice at being this kind of nerd.
Mordor, of course. So this
Mordor,
is the,
she right.
This is the marshes of Mordor. They're called Gorgoroth. And it's a bit funny because these guys are... That tries to come up pretty tough and badass. And when you look at the name, it's like a Tolkien name.
Right, you kids nerdy. Were nerds in school. Oh, bless. But it sounds like phonetically, right? Gorgoroth, rah! Yeah.
And
rage.
And I think the singer was, one year he was sort of the the gay of the year in Norway or something. So that's interesting. And yeah, this was a funny thing. He calls himself Gaal. G-A-A-H-L. Oh. Yeah. And there was, I think it was an Italian TV crew or something that sort of wanted to document Norwegian black metal. And he took them for a walk way into the mountains, and they were not prepared. So it's a pretty funny clip. I will try to find it and put it in the show notes. And where can people find the show notes if they are so inclined, Chris?
They can go to smalldifferences.fireside.fm, and they will find all the things that we've talked about that have links on the web, and the words of the week, and any other goodies that we can throw in there that are even vaguely relevant, because frankly it's just this mad grab bag of things. So yeah, all the stuff. You've reminded me about this meme of black metal groups just lost in the forest and just wandering around and having to be rescued by kind of park rangers and people.
Yeah. They're pretty bless. Cute.
I know, right? Oh, I was thinking about something else actually to do with this, right? In Canada, bear with me, I'll come back to this. In Canada, the bikers are like the bad guys, right? like, I mean, I guess there is technically a Canadian mafia and things like that, but like when people sort of need a kind of an outgroup to be the focal point, then often it's the bikers. And I've wondered about this for a couple of reasons. One, just like in the UK, I think some people are afraid of bikers because they're, you know, the bikes are noisy, they wear leather jackets, and if you're not used to that kind of scene, then, you know, I guess it can be intimidating. But actually, like, anyone I've ever met from that sort of milieu was just like completely charming. I mean, completely just lovely, soft roll over, let them, you know, let you tickle their tummy kind of like lovely, lovely person. And a thing that I noticed here in the summer when, you know, it's warm and like you leave the windows open all the time is how little motorbike noise I hear in Oslo. And it's a really big contrast with living in, say, London or Manchester, where in the summer, if you've got your windows open, it's really common to hear a really, really loud, obnoxiously loud motorbike noise. And I live near enough a big road that you'd think I would be hearing that kind of thing all the time, and I just don't. And it made me realise there's not a lot of motorbikes here. Or at least if there are, they're like perfectly tuned and completely silent. Is everyone just riding like electric mopeds that go at like 40 kilometres an hour?
Well, if you go out of the city, I guess you will have especially teenagers with mopeds. And those are not the scooter ones, but more like a trail bike style moped. Right. Because you are allowed to drive them when you're 16. But they were a bigger thing when I was young.
Okay.
I don't see them so much anymore. And no, Norway is not a biker country, really. Well, we have biker gangs like Hells Angels and Bandidos, actually. that's cute. and but I think we are more a car country. So if you go out of the city, for example, where I live, you will have more car, like youngsters in cars, which are pretty noisy.
Right.
Yeah.
Hmm.
As in the cultural pick of the week of one of the first episodes, the music video with some teen, yeah, perhaps not teenagers anymore, but
young people.
Yeah, young people in cars.
Oh God, when drinking. I say that, I feel about 60. Young people, get off my lawn, you kids.
So yeah, yeah, and in northern Norway, you have snow scooters,
right?
But also a lot of space,
right? But, like, up there, that's a legit form of transport, right? Like, it's not people going out. Like, there are a lot of places in the world, I guess, where you can kind of, as a tourist, you can go and you can ride on a thing, skidoo or whatever they're called, and that's kind of fun for you. But, like, a lot of people depend on them, right, in the winter,
yeah,
to get from A to B. It's just making me think about bikers and how frigging cold it must be to be a biker in Norway for, like, half of the year. I like to feel the wind in my hair. No, what am I saying? I can't feel my hair. I can't feel anything.
Right. Should we? We have some conflicting feedback about the episode length.
No, we don't.
My boss was actually complaining about our episodes being less than 1 hour because he's using them to whilst he doing his DIY in his apartment. So he needs entertainment.
He needs longer podcasts. Other people have requested politely or not so politely that we make them shorter, right?
I guess they could use the speed function in the podcast app. So he could just turn it to half speed and the other guys could have it double speed.
Every episode could sound like this.
That's truly frightening. We've gone back to black metal again, I feel. We just sample that and like put sort of 200 beats per minute underneath it. Yeah, we end up where we end up, I guess. The last two have been like under an hour, right? I felt that showed a maturing approach, but now I'm looking at the clock and thinking, yeah, I might not make it today.
It's not about the length, it's about the density. We could stop here, but we have some picks of the week that we have to go through.
We do.
I guess my pick of the week was Gorgoroth, and I will have to keep moving my actual pick of the week to the next week.
It's fine, just rack him up. It's all right, we'll get there eventually. Mine, this is a little bit of a weird one. This is not a piece of quote-unquote culture that I've consumed, but it is an experience that I had, and I thought it'd be kind of interesting to talk about it from a small differences point of view. So we had to have someone come and do work in the apartment to come and fit some electrical things because we were largely without lighting other than lamps, and it needed addressing.
Quick sidebar. In Norway, you are absolutely not allowed to touch the sort of the electrical stuff in your house.
Right.
That may be the case for the UK as well, but I know in the US you can do it yourself pretty much.
I think if you are getting into the kind of wires and screwdrivers kind of territory in the UK, it's supposed to be done by someone who, like, with the exception of, like, rewiring a plug, not that anyone does that anymore, but, like, you know, like, simple things like that you can do yourself, like changing a fuse, I think you can do by yourself. But, like, in the UK, if it's got to do with the electrical circuitry of your house, you're supposed to get someone professional in to do it. But, yeah, like what you just said, totally. There was a thing that we could have done, which basically involved screwing a hook into the ceiling and plugging something in. And no, a guy's got to come and do it, which is kind of interesting, actually. It's nice, like, you know, I don't mind if it provides jobs. It's not my, it's not kind of my area of expertise. If someone wants to come and do that and, our, you know, the people we rent our apartment from want to pay for that, that's great. Yeah, a thing that I noticed, right, very early on here is that if you have an overhead light in a room, there's a dangling cable. So this is absolutely antithetical to what you get in the UK. So in the UK, if you have an overhead light in a room, like you go into, say, a bedroom or a lounge or something, and you switch on the light next to the door, all the cabling is hidden except for that the bit, literally the bit that just hangs straight down from the ceiling and has the light on the end of it. And not so in Scandinavia. So here what seems to happen is that I guess you pay for a person to come and do this, but you've got plug sockets at ceiling height and your lighting solution, quote unquote, goes into the socket. It's not wired directly into the wall like you would get in the UK. It just goes into a socket. So you've basically got like a thing that's a lamp, but without any kind of structure. So you've basically just got a cable with a light on the end and then it plugs into the socket, which is in the wall at ceiling height. And then you've got this long dangling cable bit and then a hook. And you obviously can choose to put the hook wherever you want. Like you might put it in the center of the room. You might put it over the dining table, which is what we did. You can do with that what you like. But it's really weird to have all this dangling cable nonsense. Like simultaneously, it's really flexible because if you move your furniture around, which is the thing that I like to do from time to time to try and like optimize because, you know, I like Tetris and anything that is like Tetris, you can change your mind. Right. Whereas if everything is wired in and then, you know, all the wires are in the walls and in the ceiling and then you've just got this thing coming down from the center, you're basically like limited to that solution forever unless you want someone to come and dig out all the wire from the ceiling and like redo it. So the Scandinavian way of doing this is much, much more flexible. But simultaneously, it's just weird to have all this dangling cable nonsense going on.
Wow.
Sorry, that turned into a bit of a rant.
Yeah, and I would contest your broad generalizations now. I guess you have to do some more studies because this isn't really always the case. I guess it depends on sort of when the apartment was put together and the cheapness of your house lord.
Well, the apartment is like 2 years old, if that, maybe less.
That's a bit weird because... And now it's, I think there's a new regulation that it's more common. Well, now you made me uncertain, but I believe it's more common to have in-wall wiring now. And the and sort of the box where you would sort of plug the lamp will have its own kind of its own system, but it would be not be wiring. It would be a small plug which comes out of the ceiling.
Right.
So we don't have the dangling cable thing in our home.
Right. It's inconceivable in the UK to see sockets at ceiling height.
But perhaps it depends on the construction of the apartment. Because before it was, of course, you always had the cable on the outside of the walls and stuff like that. But
why do you think that is?
Because if the walls aren't insulated or on the inside or something, you don't have room for cabling. So this is in the before the 70s or something. It was more you had the wallpaper straight on the sort of the paneling,
right,
which was outside the timber, and mm-hmm. you have the insulation on the outside, I guess. So yeah.
Are these wooden houses we're talking about?
Yeah, and it's mostly wooden houses in Norway.
Right. Well, maybe that's one of the key differences then, right? Like historically, because the UK has always, well, not always, but like for the last several hundred years, been about stone and brick and stuff like that. Most houses are not made of wood. Interesting. The other thing that relates to this visit, the electrician, is I noticed this about everyone in Norway. They are super good at introducing themselves. Right. The British way is to go for as long as is humanly possible without telling the other person your name. Like you could spend 3 days at a conference with someone and not introduce yourself, and that would be completely British. And here, if you meet someone and they're giving you like a flu shot or they're coming to fix your stuff, the first thing they will do is, like before anything else, is to shake your hand and introduce themselves. It's really good. It's really mature. Because the failure to introduce oneself is like a crippling kind of source of social awkwardness in the UK, and it's really, really widespread. So people's just directness here about just going, "Hi, I'm so-and-so." And like when you meet, you never have to introduce colleagues, you never have to introduce anyone because they'll just do it themselves. Whereas in the UK, you're kind of waiting for someone else to introduce you. Like it's really awkward, and you hope that like if I'm introducing you to a friend and the two of you have never met, I will almost always say, "Hi, this is so-and-so and this is so-and-so," and let you get on with it from there. And if I can't remember one of your names because we're at a conference or I just met one of you or whatever, it's excruciatingly painful, and I have to hope that you will introduce yourselves to each other, but it's really unlikely. If all three of us are British, it's really unlikely that's going to happen. So it's just, oh, it's just so painful. So here it's completely delightful because the first thing people do anywhere you go is if you've not met them, you know, they'll say, "We haven't met. Hi, I'm so-and-so." And that's just delightful and mature and sensible. And it's almost completely absent in the UK.
But it's not unproblematic because if you are an introvert.
I bet you do it anyway.
Social encounters are stressful.
I get that.
And when you're stressed, your recall isn't at its best. So you start the social encounter with introducing yourself and the other person, and you have completely forgotten their name, and you know you have introduced yourself, and you can't ask again. So then you have to do all sort of social gymnastics to tease out the name again.
Right. We do that in the UK too, to be fair. Introverts in the UK are having that same problem. But they're starting, I think, way behind, which is that they never heard the name in the first place. And now that they've met this person 3 or 4 times, it's becoming a little bit awkward that neither of them knows each other. And like they could conceivably die of old age before either of them, you know, like say they meet at a bus stop every day.
They're never going to know. Someone should make an app for that. Well, Facebook has it covered soon anyways.
Almost certainly.
Just take their pictures and you will have the name on your screen.
Right. Not creepy at all.
Word of the week. Ah, damn it. I forgot. I introduced the thing. And I wanted you to explain me when when we are using the and when we are using the. Right? That's a thing, right?
It's totally a thing.
The car, the apple. Is it something like that? Is something again with the vowels?
Oh, is it the and the? Is
yeah,
it that?
Yeah, that's the thing.
Boom.
Yeah.
Right. If there's a vowel after the, if the first thing that happens after the is a vowel, then it's the. So the apple, the orange. But if it's a consonant, the tree, the.
All right. The apple, the car.
Yeah. Right.
I'll have to practice this.
Right.
Among all the other things.
Sure. Yeah. I remember being in primary school and there were kids who clearly had not absorbed this rule. Like, we were never taught it formally, but you could hear that there were kids who had not picked it up implicitly. And I remember thinking, you kids. You know, here's me, like 6 years old, just going, dude, you suck at languages. I'm a terrible person. I've been a terrible person for a long time.
Well, all kids are terrible persons. Kids are psychopaths.
That's a strong assertion.
Contested.
I can't. A lot of the behavior that occurs at that age is just, yeah, straight up madness. But it settles down for the most part.
Yeah, so word of the week. We have to do this.
We do.
Should I start?
Would you?
I'm not sure you can continue after mine.
So, try me.
So in the spirit of cultural exchange, I have chosen a British word this time. It's actually the most British word I know of. And you see where this is headed, right?
I do.
I have chosen rather.
And you've done this to wind me up.
Yeah. Because I wonder what's the thing? Why are you wounded up about this word?
I am wound up by this word. I'm wound up by you using it because in every other regard, your English is like contemporary and like, you know, vaguely kind of hip. And I'm sure there are still people who say rather, but it's not 1950 something anymore. So one can use the word rather in context like, oh, that's rather poor. But increasingly, it's a very old fashioned word to use. And I think the way that you mean it is when someone says something and you agree with them and you say rather. And, you know, because, yeah, this is not 1940s BBC radio anymore. No one says that anymore. So why did you pick it? Just to scratch, just to kind of like, right?
Yeah, but I think I picked it up a summer where I read through all the P.G. Wodehouse books.
That was your mistake.
Yeah.
Or not. You know, I'm told they're very funny. I haven't read them, but yeah.
Oh, you should. But rather.
But do you use this in seriousness when you're speaking English?
No, but I don't speak English in seriousness.
just for fun, just for sport.
Rather, yeah. But it's pretty versatile. You can use it almost at any time.
The thing is, coming from a Norwegian, it's completely charming. If I were to say that as a native English speaker in a British context, I would get some looks. As a foreigner, you can pull it off. Knock yourself out.
Cool. Yours?
Well, I wrote a couple of things here. Not because I wanted to talk about two separate words, but I wanted to talk about a couple of words that came up for me this week and I thought were kind of interesting. So I was listening to a podcast and it was in Norwegian and someone described the streets late at night as being folketomt, empty of people. But literally, people empty. And then, even better, in a work context, someone used the word mangelfull, which literally means full of missing things in the context that it was used, like a thing that had missingness. And I was just kind of quietly delighted by the ability to throw together words, to stick together words that mean something full and something empty, you can get full, like full as a suffix is used a lot in English, right? Like thoughtful. But it tends to kind of, it tends to be a little more abstract. Whereas people empty and full of lack or full of missingness, I thought was kind of entertaining.
What about emptyful?
Emptyful is not a word.
Well, no, it is.
It sounds like a word. Can you say tomful?
No, you can't. You cannot be that sort of strict about it.
Right.
Emptyful. It plays well.
It sounds nice, but if you can't say it in English, you can't say it in Norwegian either, right?
Is that a thing?
I don't know. It is now, but like I can't say tomful. I wouldn't mean anything, right? And you can't say emptyful.
Of course, you can say tomful, and now it will mean tomfullery. Yeah, this is how Norwegian works, right? You can put two completely random words together and you'll have a new concept.
Right. Way more legitimately than in English. It's great. It's like Lego for language.
Because you would say empty full. Because you don't stick words together.
Right. You couldn't write it emptiful. Like, that's just not going to cut it in English. Yeah.
Not even with a hyphen?
No, I don't think that would work. Well, now I'm wondering, because you've got emptiness. Could you have emptiful? It wouldn't mean anything. It would be very strange. Yeah.
Or, I was to say nasse empty.
Huh?
That being Scottish, you should...
Lacking a nessie, yeah. Nessilus.
Right, okay. Cool. But I like the mangelfull. I haven't thought about that.
Yeah. Is that a word that you've ever seen before, or is this really hyper-specialized business language?
It's pretty common, I guess.
How would you translate it?
Mangelfull?
Mm.
That's the problem.
Right.
I think you had it, you explained it well.
All right.
Google Translate translates mangelfull to deficient. Which is not...
That's not right, is it?
You have to do some more machine learning. Yeah.
That definition is, by definition, lacking.
Mm. So, we have mentioned the website. We are also present in the social medias. Our Twitter account is SMAFO. RSKEELLERN. Good luck.
If you go to our website, the podcast website, you will find a link to the Twitter account. And bless you for trying that, because I did dare you to. And it's hard, right?
This is not the Spelling Bee podcast, is it? Now use that in a sentence. Yeah, okay.
Yeah. Små forskjeller. Google us.
And now we are in the situation that we are recording, I guess, a week before this is published.
Yeah.
So if you want to call in, I guess you had to do that last week.
Yeah. It's particularly weird given that on the previous episode we had a visit from Future Knut, and now I'm really not sure what's happening. I've become dislocated in time.
Yeah, this is like the interstellar of podcasts.
It's just me banging on the monitor going, is this thing on?
Especially if you listen to this in half speed. All right,
but at the same time, traveling faster than light. Okay.
Yeah. Do we have a teaser for the next episode, which will air in 3 weeks, but will be recorded in 2 weeks?
Using yesterday's technology, if the last episode is anything to go by.
Or should it be a surprise? We could talk about Janteloven.
Oh, let's talk about Janteloven. That's a great idea.
Yeah, we have done 10 episodes. Are we allowed to be proud of ourselves and be loud about it? Perhaps not.
Spoilers.
Well, till next time, ha det bra. Takk for at du hørte på.
Takk for at du hørte på. Ha det bra.